Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the LEGO Masters recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. I'm your host, Liana Boris, and wow, what an explosive set of episodes we have to get into today. That's right, we are talking about LEGO Masters Season 2, Episodes 2, Episode 3, and Episode 4. And as per usual, I am not alone. I have with me a woman who is an upgraded setup and ready to get her brick on. That's right, it is our LEGO expert, Marisa Connors. Marisa, how are you?
I am doing really awesome. I am recording from the brand new setup, brand new headphones, brand new mic, brand new computer, and all thanks to Rob and Sam and the one and only Puya Zanvakili for helping me pick out a lot of this stuff. So I am super excited and ready to go.
Do you think your computer could handle being on a seismic table, though? Could it make it all the way to 11?
I don't think it would adjust that. Yeah, I'd rather not. I think the hinge is a lot stronger than my last one, so that's good. But
all right. Well, good news today is that we won't be testing anything on the Richter scale, but we will be getting into all of the explosions, all of the earthquakes, and of course, the fashion that we had over fashion in 3 episodes of LEGO Masters. Okay, so overall, I just want to say that I'm loving the season so far. I really enjoyed these past 3 episodes. I was a little skeptical after the first episode, thinking like, oh, there's going to be a clear division between who I think is in the top and who I think is in the bottom. And what I've seen over these 3 episodes is not only have I enjoyed the diversity of the challenges, but it has really mixed up which teams have been in the top and which teams have been in the bottom. And all of that put together makes it a really enjoyable experience.
I absolutely agree. I think I was realizing, especially watching the recent episode, episode 4, that I am way more sucked into everybody's story and all of the builders than I was, I think, even in the first season early. Like, I'm already like, oh man, people are going home. And I quite got that, you know, as early last time. So yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of good talent, a lot of good builders, a lot of variety, and these episodes have been really fun to watch.
I do. I feel the same way where they're, when they announce the 2 teams in the bottom, I'm like, oh, but I don't want either of them to go. You know,
I
think that's the sign of good casting. You have people that we're invested in and that we care about. And like I said, I think there's, you know, maybe some teams that potentially I could see going further if I were to make predictions. But really, it's been such a crapshoot. It feels almost week to week where there are teams that I thought would never end up in the bottom. And then you have the make and shake challenge. And some of the teams that I thought were like, oh, of course, they're going to be in the top, ended up in the bottom. So very shocking, very fun. And that's made for a really enjoyable experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there hasn't been a team that's gone home that I'm like, oh, that's, oh.
Oh, no, I'm not ready to lose them yet. No.
I know. Like, could they just build a little more?
No. And I think also the types of challenges that we've seen have also been really interesting. We'll get through each of one of them individually, but I just want to commend the producers for what they've done this season, because I do feel that they got their sea legs after going through season 1. And I think season 2 is back with a bang, I suppose.
Yeah, which it's a good way to really you going for a Masked Singer style transition there.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Well, speaking of bangs, I got my hair cut last. Oh no! Wait, wait.
No. Oh no! Oh, that's always a terrible choice for me. And,
yeah. Yeah, I remember I had bangs for a while when I was little, Mom always cut them too short, and I had this gap between my eyebrows and my bangs.
Yeah, there's the picture of you, I think it's on a horse that I can think of, where it's really prominent, like, oh, that's not good at all.
Yeah, it was practical, I guess. It kept it out of my eyes, but still. Yeah, I mean, right. I guess that's what I would fail at the fashion challenge.
Indeed, I know. My husband and I, we talk about it because when we first started dating, I went through a bangs phase again, and both of us look at pictures from that era, and we're like, no, that's every time I think I need to get bangs, I need to look at our Christmas picture that year and just be like, oh, nope. Nope, that's right. Not that.
That's the sign of true love, though. He stayed with you through the bangs.
It's been 12 years since the bangs. So, yeah, aww, I think we're doing well.
Okay, enough about hair. Let's talk about Legos. So episode 2 is all about the explosions. And we had a similar challenge in season 1, but they changed it up by going for these slow motion hero shots where they had to pick a minifigure random and then create the story for that minifigure. The other thing that they added, which I'm really curious to hear your take on, Marisa, is these blastastic substances. So it's not just about the way that the bricks explode. You have to also incorporate either glitter, slime, water, or colored dust.
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting element because it kind of mixes things up a little bit. I think they did the last time, you know, they didn't have anything that blew up with the sets. It was just, you know, the set had to blow up looking good on its own. And some of the teams took that with the slime and the glitter. Other ones just used the slime and the glitter and the dust. I thought it was interesting that they didn't have a choice of what to do, but I was kind of wondering if, like, especially with the slime and the glitter and the dust, was there a color that they could choose, or were they just given a color of that to use?
I have no idea if they could pick, you mean the glitter and the colored dust. I don't know about picking the color, but I will say, I think the teams that got stuck with the slime and the water got shafted here because the glitter and the colored dust look fabulous. And then the slime, you could legit see the packet of slime with the slime still in the packet flying out with the Lego. So I don't know if those were executed, not to the competitors, it's not their issue. I think it's just
right.
The slime packs didn't quite go off the way we wanted them to.
Yeah, right. I think one team in particular, you know, had a good idea for their slime, a better idea than I thought the other team that got slime did. But yeah, we can go into that when we go through.
Yeah. All right. So the other main point here that was, you know, you mentioned by the judges, keep the minifigure safe. Of course, that comes to fruition later on. And these challenges are really all about planning for failure to make sure that your explosion fails in the places that you want it to. I need to ask you, because if you had to get one of these characters, these minifigures, and I'll read all the options, which one would you pick? So you have, of the water creatures, you have the cabaret singer, elf girl, and plant monster. Of the glitter monsters, you have wizard, rocket boy, and jewel thief. Of the slime monsters, you have alien, intergalactic girl, and monster scientist. And of dust, you have centaur warrior, ladybug, and violin guy, the classic violin guy.
Yeah, I thought that was actually really funny, but they did a really good job with that one. But yeah, I think I would have liked the jewel thief and glitter. I thought you could do a lot of fun with. I thought that one would have been a lot of fun. I think, you know, the alien and slime, or the intergalactic girl and slime, you know, I think those lend themselves to blowing up aliens or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think either jewel thief and glitter or rocket boy and glitter.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently I was a glitter thing.
I think the glitter looked the best, though. The glitter,
yeah, the sparkling. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just added to the effect.
Right. And I think it was kind of interesting because at first I thought, you know, they said hero shot. It was supposed to be a single shot, but they never just paused really on a single shot for more than a few seconds. Mm-hmm. They showed the slow motion, which in that the glitter looks really awesome. But I bet you in a single shot, some of the other ones might have looked as good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, not the slime. Or the water, really, if I'm being honest. I even, after the first slime, I was like, okay, Liana, you're going to pay attention to the slime. It was packets, a packet of slime. Like, clearly the explosion happened. Some of the slime went smoosh, but then the rest of the slime just stayed in the packet, and the packet flew out of the build.
Yeah, anyway. The slime was, I think, the least performing out of the four elements. The water for the cabaret, I thought, actually did okay, but...
Right.
They also had a lot of like little Legos, kind of like in the first season, mm-hmm. that came with it that I think really enhanced that look.
Yeah. I think there were two, one of water and one of slime, that utilized it probably to the best of its ability. Whereas all the glitters and the dusts, I thought looked great. But let's get into each of these builds. So what we're going to do is the same thing that we did last time. We're going to go through each set of competitors and talk about their build and what they were able to do. So First up, we have Dave and Richard, and this is going in the order that they did their explosions in. So these are the guys that have only been building for a short amount of time, but we find out that they were connected over their shared passion for activism. They're the guys who did the Brooklyn, Chicago hot dog pizza thing from last week.
Yeah, that was
and
awesome.
They get violin guy with dust.
Which actually, for any of the teams to have gotten violin guy, it's Richard who's the DJ, or do I have them back? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I feel like that was a good pairing, because of anybody, he is the most musically inclined from at least the backstories we've gotten. And so it seems appropriate that he could come up with a story to fit that.
And they do. I mean, they sort of have this, you know, magic creates the symphony of destruction that violin guy is able to use to bring harmonic balance back to the land because of the urban blight and the factory and all of that, which in terms of storytelling, I think that's something that was really cool. And they were able to weave into the explosion and weave into even Will laughing at the concept of violin guy. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I agree. I even, you know, in my notes, I have good story. And I think that's the only one I really wrote down anything about the story specifically. So that's, yeah. And the fact that, you know, when they blew it up, they still had those strong notes showing up there. Violin guy was standing proud. I think it worked out really well.
Right. Because then not only because it's kind of to your point about, oh, well, they didn't actually freeze frame on anything. But that's why this one kind of works, because you have the explosion, which was symmetric, looked really great. Yeah, some of the notes did explode. But like you mentioned, you had those three left. So then you have the shot, the before, the middle and the after, which all kind of work for their story and all work. And with the dust also, I think just made for something that was really visually appealing.
Yeah, especially when you think of like, okay, blowing up a factory or blowing up an old building, there's always dust involved. So I think that actually even matched even better.
Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, it was enough to get them in the top two. So shout out to Dave and Richard for putting together something that that really just, wow, it's just music to my ears, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think going forward, just I've come to like them more and more throughout the episodes.
Oh my God, I know. That's why I made the hat episode real. Well, we'll talk about it. I made the hat episode really special.
Yep.
I really love them too. I think they're really great. Which actually leads us into our next team, Natalie and Michelle, who I'm also really enjoying quite a bit, especially after episode four. So they have Intergalactic Girl with Slime.
Yeah, I think they took this in a totally, I guess this is the other one that I wrote a story note, is that it was a non-typical story. It's not a story I would have thought of for this pairing at all. Like I said earlier, if I had this, I would have thought of, you know, blowing up a giant alien or something like that. But that's not the route they took.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were creative. They thought outside the box and they put together this whole space coffee shop where the narrative of serving decaf. And so they're going to explode it because, you know, of course, it's being described as regular coffee. And I think what they were able to do is they were able to direct part of the explosion out of that coffee cup because that was part of the story. So that part I thought was really cool. The blowing up of the actual coffee shop itself, it really just sort of like came out the front. I would have loved to have seen, they had this sign that said coffee on the side. I would love to have seen that fall apart because that was kind of like the destruction of coffee. That's my, that honestly is my only critique for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really like that they got the lid of the like big, you know, coffee shop sign, or not the word coffee, but the actual coffee cup kind of on the side of the shop. Yeah, they got the lid to blow off that. And they did use little bricks inside the coffee shop to kind of make it more intense and more color, which I like too.
And that's what I'm saying with the slime, man. I saw the bricks before I saw any slime. I'm rewatching it now. And what I see is bricks explode. And then at the very end, a slime packet flies out of the building. Okay. Yeah. That's not their fault, right? That's a failure of the slime.
Yeah. No.
Anyway, that being said, I thought it was really creative and they were able to also make it very intergalactic feeling with all of these sort of tubey things on the side. That's the technical term, I know.
Definitely.
And I think that added to the aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it was a really nicely built set. They used the space really well. And then, yeah,
I agree.
I think
very
it was
good.
Nice.
Okay. Maria and Philip are up next. Wow. I was so impressed. I've been really impressed with them because after that first episode, I was like, ooh, they're dead in the water. We're going to, you know, they're going to be gone soon. But they pull together this cabaret singer with a water build, which was gorgeous.
Yeah. And yeah, I think they did the best with the water. I think they enhanced it with those blue and white little small Legos and made that, you know, explosion look a lot better than it would have with just the water alone.
And the thing that they did is they only blew up the building in the middle. So only the other two buildings stayed intact. And at first I was like, oh, but then I was like, oh, because I realized that's the whole point. The whole point is to only blow up the cabaret part and then leave the other gray, you know, nondescript buildings intact.
Yeah, right.
Very impressed.
And yeah, they had a very nicely targeted, you know, kind of like the blown the lid off the coffee cup. It was, this is what we want to do. And they executed it well.
Yeah. So this is the married couple. And I think we'll see more from them in the next two episodes as well. That makes me want to see more from them, which I'm always happy to be wrong when I feel that this team, you know, maybe is weaker. You know, but then they're able to come out and do something really creative and really gorgeous. So shout out to them.
Yeah, I think even watching the first episode, I mean, some of their elements to that build were really good. It was just not on the scale that everybody or that they're expected to have. And I think they've made that adjustment really well in their next few builds.
Yeah, I agree. Well, next up, we have the twins, Caleb and Jacob, and they went in the intergalactic route that you were thinking of. So they have Rocket Boy, with glitter.
He hasn't become a rocket man yet.
No, he doesn't have his rocket bar mitzvah. I tried to make a portmanteau and it just really didn't work. So
that's okay. Okay, we move on.
Yeah, no, I can't. I still can't do it.
That's okay. Yeah. So, yeah, their UFOs, the design on their UFOs was awesome. The fact that they had a bunch in the air, just like, you know, the comment of the judges was it looks like fireworks going off when they exploded the two that were kind of looked like they were hovering in the air. They had that little, you know, map of the planet behind them. I thought it was a really neat build.
I thought it was really neat, too. At first wanted more from the explosion on the ground, but I think the fact that the two firework explosions are just so strong, and that's where I'm saying the glitter was helpful. Just throwing that glitter up in the air, it really made it feel like the fireworks show. That if it hadn't had the glitter, I would have been curious to know what it would have looked like. But that being said, the whole point of the task is to build theoretically with that substance in mind. So I think for the glitter substance that they were given for their little rocket boy, they also did a very good job.
Absolutely. But I wonder, because glitter does not come off of anything and it just sticks around forever. So like, do you think they had teams of like Lego interns scrubbing those bricks afterwards? Because there's no way they got the glitter off of everything.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about it for the bricks themselves, because I was like, oh yeah, well they'll sweep it up. There'll be a couple flakes around, but I just imagine the next week they're digging through the tub and why is there so much glitter on all of these?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the herpes of craft supplies.
They get everywhere and don't go away.
They just never go away. Okay. Next up, Paris and Moto. So these are the guys, the engineers, the dads, and they get Elf Girl with water.
Which I thought it was funny because on my rewatch, I'm sitting there through the whole episode going, what the heck did they like do? Because I feel like they, you know, announced what they got and then you didn't see them until the actual explosion.
Disappeared.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, am I the only one that missed this?
No, it wasn't you. As I'm taking notes, I can see how many notes I have for each of the teams. And the only thing I had written down was Elf Girl Water. So
Okay. But I mean, it turns out that obviously they made a really cool explosion with their dam burst. And what they, again, like you said, the water's kind of lackluster. And what they enhanced it with was rainbow colored bricks behind that dam. Mm-hmm. Which I thought it was a cool story. I thought they did a lot without even kind of worrying about the water, but the water was the main theme with the dam bursting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if they got points for that. I mean, you know, obviously we don't know exactly what the judging criteria is, but it was water themed and it sort of fit, you know. So even though you couldn't really see any of the water packets, which I guess it would be the same as the slime packets, it's just water packets.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see it at all. But they compensated for that with the rainbow color bricks. I think the other decision they could have made was to go with all blue bricks to simulate the water. I think that also could have been a good choice, but the rainbow is really gorgeous. And I guess it's water flowing up. You know what it is? It's spraying up into the sky. So it's a rainbow with the light.
Ooh, a little Rayleigh scattering. Nice. Nice. Bringing in the science.
See, they're so smart. Oh my God.
I had one of my physics professors had a 5-year-old when I was going through the class, and I liked talking to him. And he would talk to the class. Somebody asked him, like, well, what do you tell your daughter, you know, about rainbows being five? And he goes, well, you know, I explained to her the science. I say it's Rayleigh scattering of the light that's coming from the sun and refracting in the which I just thought was really funny. And then he ended the whole thing with, sweetie.
Aw, sweet. Well, honey.
Yeah.
And also magic.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Never too young to teach them the ways of science.
Nope. But I like your interpretation of the rainbow. That is the sun catching the water bursting up.
Even if it's not what they intended, I'm going to give them credit for it.
Absolutely. It's art. You can interpret it how you'd like.
Yeah. Art. Okay. All right. Susan and Jen, the moms, the Lego moms, and they end up with the wizard, which had glitter. And the part of their story that we learned, which, you know, we got to know a little bit about them from episode 1, but we got to know much more about them here in episode 2, was that one of Jen's kids actually was diagnosed with cancer, but went through chemo and, you know, it came out doing great. They watched Lego Masters together. And so it was nice to have that personal connection and learn about that coming from Jen. And so that was sort of what's inspiring them to be on Lego Masters.
Yeah. Not only did they watch Lego Masters together, but they actually build together, and that was one of their bonding experiences while her son was going through that. So yeah, I think that was really cool to hear that backstory of how Lego, you know, got folks through things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's very cute. Very cute.
Yeah.
And they, of course, have the, like we said, the wizard with the glitter. And their whole thing was they also had quite a story. It was that the wizard made a, and correct me if I'm wrong, the wizard made a potion, which then made the spider grow giant. Right. And so then it was like, all right, we just got to blow the whole thing up, much like some type of weird sci-fi movie. Look, we made a mistake in the lab. Just blow it all up.
Yeah. Before it gets out and wreaks havoc on the city. Yeah. I loved their lab design. It was kind of, you know, kind of Harry Pottery to me. The little stained glass window they made definitely inspired the little tiara I posted on Twitter in the center, because I thought it looked gorgeous. They had all the books on the shelves. I thought their little lab design was awesome. And the spider blew apart really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the spider when they first described it, it was going to be legs flying everywhere. I think they accomplished that, and they were able to keep their minifig safe and really, you know, make this explosion look great.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did definitely kind of redeem themselves from that first episode where they tried to go too big and ran out of time. And so I think this was a good redemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the swan. I mean, it makes you feel that, they can do it. It was just the first instance that we saw they maybe went a little too big, but they didn't have to go home, and they were able to show us what they were able to do here in this episode. The glitter helps, not gonna lie. The glitter helps.
Yeah, the glitter does help. But I think that's why, you know, we talked about the first episode as well. Okay, the first season, they also didn't send anybody home in the first episode, and that's the learning. If you can adapt to the situation and kind of figure out what's going on, then you'll do better. And I think they did that.
And because you're just tested on so many different things, you have to adapt, which, you know, so they wanted people that are going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, Brian and Lauren. Okay. I need to talk about them in general first.
Yes.
They have been getting very little edit from what I've noticed. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like they show up from time to time, but there are definitely other teams that have more of the camera time. But I think that they're probably some of the best builders. they remind me, and this is so weird because they are siblings, and the other pair that I'm thinking of, Tyler and
I know
Amy,
exactly
are, but they don't they
I know exactly who they remind you of.
I can't help it. I can't
no,
help
in
it.
My notes, I say like Tyler and Amy.
Yes.
So they have the so character weird. Building like yes. Tyler and Amy. Yeah. And then like, nope, I totally agree. And the fact that they're siblings, it does make that a little weird for me.
And they but all kind of look similar somewhat do. To each other. So yeah. It's really confusing in my head because I have to continue to remind myself, no, they're siblings. They're siblings.
I know.
I don't know why. Yeah, it really messes with me. Okay. But,
oh, one of the yeah. things about it, though, that when they did get airtime during this episode, they cut to Lauren, you know, playing Legos with Brian as small children.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, oh, my gosh, I have a cassette tape of me when I was like 2 years and a couple months, just like. There's 10 minutes of me just sorting through Legos. Like you can just hear this like of Legos in the background. And somehow, you know, I mean, there's more to that tape, but they somehow our parents decided that that was a good use of a cassette tape to send to our grandparents to show how I'm doing.
See, this is what Marisa does all day. This
yeah, it's just.
Yeah, that was really cute. That definitely reminded me of you also, which yeah. very, very adorable. All right. Well, they get the ladybug with Dust. And so this is where their character building really comes in full force because they built this massive, really cute looking frog.
Yeah, their design. Yeah. Back to the character design. Really awesome. The tongue looked awesome. And on my rewatch, I kind of paused on the tongue itself. And they use a lot of bricks that I wouldn't have thought to use to make the smooth surfaces, but also make it kind of undulating. And mm-hmm. it definitely looked like it was in motion, reaching out for this ladybug character.
Mm-hmm. Remember, I think we learned about it last year, but creative parts usage. Right?
Indeed. Yes. Yes, it is.
That's, they have some very creative parts of usage.
Very true. Very what are you learning from that? Season one?
I mean, we'll talk about interlocking next, but I mean, pretty much a Lego expert now.
You got well, this.
The thing that also they pointed out, the judges pointed out, is that it does almost also look like it is in motion, which is good. And so you have this, the story tells itself, right? So you have a ladybug about to being eaten and then
yep.
the frog's head explodes.
I know. It's, yeah. And there was, I think in this one, there were quite a few bricks that flew by the ladybug that I was like, oh no. And then somehow mm-hmm. she stood up. I was like, oh,
yes,
she made it. Well, there was actually in most of these, I was really surprised that more of them didn't get knocked down.
Because they kept teasing, you got to keep your minifigure safe. You got to keep your minifigure safe. I kept thinking, okay, one of them's going to fall down. Like one of them's going to fall down. So I was waiting for that to happen, which we'll talk about Mark and Steven. But anyway, Sarita and Randall are up next. So these are the friends who have the first Black-owned creative studio for Lego art. So check that out if you're interested. They got the Centaur Warrior with Dust.
Which I thought was kind of funny because they're like, I don't know anything about centaurs. Yeah. It's like, well, and then Will brought up a good point. Who cares? They're made up anyway.
Right. So, they're already fake.
Yeah, exactly. And then back to your Dust. Yeah, I could not think of Dust without thinking of Little Britain. So
I know.
There we go.
Dust. Oh my God. Did I tell you Puya bought this bread and it's like 45 calorie per slice bread? And he was like, yeah, it's only 45 calories per slice. And then he ate four slices. And it totally reminded me of it's half the calories, so you can have twice as much.
You can have twice as much. Yeah, no kidding. I thought you were going to say, like, toasted it and it turned to dust or something.
Oh, no. Well, it does get very tiny because it's essentially, it just shrinks up, right? Yeah, it just shrinks up. I was like, just buy hefty normal bread. You are going to eat the same number
and
of calories.
Only eat two. Yeah.
Yeah, because you ate four slices. Well, anyway. Oh, God. Yeah. I hope he doesn't listen. Okay. Anyway.
Oh, you know he will.
I hope he won't. All right, back to Sarita and Randall. Speaking of dust, so there, I think they had a really good idea. Again, it's all made up. They had a story with the villainous wizard Andre. I loved that he was specifically named.
Dude, that was awesome. And it's not okay. A name I would think of, like, you know, there's what is that movie that's got Jermaine Clement in it? There's a movie where he like teaches this course on creative sci-fi fantasy writing, and he talks about
yes.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of it. Somebody will tell me, but yeah, he goes through like the endings you can put on names to make them like, you know, fantasy. And so I was thinking like Andranus, like I was going through those in my head. I was like, no, Andre is awesome.
It fits. Yeah. Andre, you know, Andre. Yeah.
And dude, that character was awesome. I thought the design on the wizard itself was really cool too.
Right. And that's the thing is that I think that the Gentleman Broncos, does that sound right?
Yes. Gentleman Broncos. Check it out. Yes. It's awesome.
A teenager attends fantasy camp. Yes.
Yep. That is it. And it's an amazing movie.
So there, don't add us. I mean, you can add us, but we also told you it's Gentleman Broncos. The thing about theirs is that they just had the issue with the explosion component of it, where I thought it looked really cool. They had the explosion, but unfortunately part of the wall, they almost did too good of a job building the wall, because it fractures, but then it doesn't really fall forward in kind of the way that you want it to. So I would say that was just kind of the one thing that maybe held them back.
Right. I agree with that. And actually, you know, spoiler alert for next episode, they had interlocking bricks in that original wall they were going to use. And that was kind of this is too sturdy. We got to take this off.
Yeah. Too strong. Save that for next week, guys.
Yeah. Right. Come on.
And that they were shocked because when the bottom two teams got announced, they cut to them. They both had this look of, oh, my gosh, we thought for sure we were going to be in the bottom.
Yeah, right. I agree. I thought they did a good job. Yeah, we'll talk about the bottom two. That was interesting. But
yeah. Well, one of the bottom two is Jack and Dawn. So this is the motorcycle rider, or at least Jack is the motorcycle rider. And they had the one that you were maybe interested in, the jewelry thief.
Yeah, I actually really liked their story of, you know, this jewel store that rats are selling plastic gems out of. I thought that was really funny. But, you know, as the judges brought up, there was a lot of empty space in their build. They could have put, you know, pedestrians or bicycles or, you know, a parked car on the edge that would have been out of the way. I think there was more they could have done with this.
Mm-hmm. And I get probably what they were going for was to protect the minifigure, right? Because that was what the judges kept saying. Don't let the minifigure come into danger.
Right.
So of course you want to build further back. But then, like you were saying, well, you don't have to fill it with things that are going to explode. You can fill that space, which I think a lot of the other teams did, with things that would just sort of stay in place, or maybe they fall over, but they're not going to damage the minifigure.
Right. And it almost, you know, putting things in between your minifigure and whatever's blowing up kind of protects it, in that you have some, you know, baffles, so to speak, to explode into, that's going to, you know, dampen the explosion towards your minifigure. So I think that's another reason. But, you know, as we're watching them build, they're trying to build these breakaway walls, but then they're falling over while they're building them. So then they try to put some reinforcement on it. And I think they just got it reinforced too much after, you know, struggling with that falling apart while they were building.
Right. I think there was one place where they could have loosened it up a little bit, but I think even if they had kept the two buildings on the side intact, similar to the cabaret singer, I think that would have been all right. But it's just sort of the multiple issues with the not having enough in between with all that empty space. And then, like you said, the places that didn't break quite right put them ultimately in the bottom.
Yeah. Greg actually had an interesting insight watching this with me, in that they had those awesome power lines, you know, in front of the buildings. He was wondering if those even kind of prevented the explosions from coming out too much. And I have to go back and rewatch that, because I could see that, you know, if the walls kind of fell forward a little bit into them, but then just didn't fall over because those power lines were in the way.
Right. Because it blocks it. That's possible. Definitely a possibility. Mark and Steven are up next. So these are the decade of building a competitive level brothers. I'm mentioning these things because this is how I remember them. So
yeah,
so you're going to get it too.
Well, and they throwback competed with Tyler. So there you go.
Yes. Tyler of Tyler and Amy, who remind me very much of Brian and Lauren, who are siblings and not married and definitely are not pregnant, I hope, with each other's
man.
Child.
Would...
anyway, all right.
No big announcements at the end from them.
Oh, God. Mark and Steven, they have the plant monster with water. And I think they were also one of the teams that did actually okay with the water. But their whole concept was all of these little fruits and vegetables and then the mutant watermelon monster.
Which, if you think about plants and water, like watermelon is the go-to for that. So I thought that was really cool. And then they had these like little blueberry, well, giant blueberries. But yeah, they really played on that theme of, you know, fruit and, excuse me, fruit and plants and, you know, gardens need water. So I think it was a kind of a good choice, maybe an obvious one, but a good one. And their design on the watermelon was really cool with a face and everything.
Yeah, I thought this was really great. They got some critiques that like the eye didn't explode or something like that. That there was still an eye, winking eye left that maybe it wasn't supposed to. But I would say overall, their explosion was really, really good. Just the biggest issue was, of course, they lost their minifigure.
Which I think ties back into the fact that it almost makes a really good story that needs like a comeback to it, because since the explosion was awesome and the giant watermelon, you know, it looked like their intention was to leave what looked like a watermelon slice for its mouth. But then the eye was still there and it knocked over the minifig. It's like, oh, it's not dead yet kind of thing.
Yeah.
So even though you know, they violated a rule and that wasn't the intent, I actually thought it was really cool that it turned out that way. However, my critique is that they stress so much, don't knock over the minifigures, and nothing ever came of it. It was not even mentioned in the bottom.
Yeah. That's true.
Especially everybody else has stayed up. Obviously, that was not the bulk of the judging part.
So here's the thing is that because these three challenges in particular were really interesting with the way they were judged, because I thought, and it was almost in retrospect, that the knocking off of the minifigure, that's sort of the bare minimum criteria, right? Because for episode three, it was how strong can you make it? So if you're the strongest, you're going to be in the top. If you're the weakest, you're going to be in the bottom. And same with the hat challenge. If it falls over, you're in the bottom. There's something that is just a yes or no criteria that is used to make the decision that apparently in this episode does not matter at all.
Absolutely. I mean, even though they had their bottom two, like in episode five, we're not there yet. Episode four. Yeah. Haha, I see the future. Episode four, they had a bottom three, or was it four? No, it was three.
Episode three, yeah. The fake one.
So
it's because the three of them were all in the bottom because they all had the lowest.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So it's not like you couldn't put them in the bottom just to say, hey, you missed this criteria that everybody else hit, even though we've already know, you know, who we're going to take home. But I think so. I rules committee wise, that was annoying.
Yeah. Get them with your paperwork and your technicalities.
My whole
Everybody
job
loves that.
Half my job is technicalities. So apparently I'm sensitive to it.
You're perfectly suited to dispute the bottom two teams. Yeah. Bottom two, top two. It's arbitrary, right? They have done a top three, bottom three. So.
Right.
Since we saw that, it's possible they could have changed it. They also could have put Sarita and Randall down there, too. Make the bottom four. See if I care. Anyway. Oh,
have a half and half.
Yeah.
You know, the Top Chef does the half and half. So let's do that.
There you go. See?
See?
Okay.
You see?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take that, your rule book. Zax. It's time to talk about the Zax. First, Zach and Wayne, the brothers who are the sushi chefs, and they got also the slime and they had the alien.
They did. And they went exactly where probably I would have gone with alien and slime, which is build a giant space monster and blow it up. And I like their creature design. I think maybe it could have had more pizzazz. I don't know. I thought the design itself of that monster with all its tentacles coming out was really cool, though. Mm-hmm. To me, their description of their own space monster, where they're talking about like, we're probably not an A. We might be a B. B's probably good enough. Like, to me, I was like, oh, Oh, that's imposter syndrome right there.
I mean, it looks as good as the frog, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was great creature. Yeah.
It was great. It was great. I loved it. Well, they have a little bit of imposter syndrome next week too, and they use their golden brick. Yeah. But
I think I even wrote it in my notes for next week.
It explodes quite nicely. They have a story with their hero Blastro or whatever his name was, and you know, that they had to set the spaceship to explode, which ultimately takes out the monster. It completely exploded. I thought it was really cool. So they're another for me a team to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even in episode one, obviously, we saw that they have got some skills and design, and they just keep knocking it out. So
Our final team and final Zach is Zach and Tim, the father-son team representing their hometown. And they got monster scientists with slime. And they had this ambitious idea to make this factory with the words POW exposed when the explosion happened.
Really cool concept, but this definitely, I feel like if they didn't say they intended to do that, they may not have ended on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Because they did the best with the slime.
They did. They were my favorites with the slime. They had the glassware, you know, with the whatever solution in it, and they explode, and those exploded greatly. And but they, you know, said we've got this plan for this to happen, and then it didn't. And I think that is part of why they end up in the bottom too.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the issue is that you can kind of see it behind. So if you're a judge, you can see it as they're wheeling it over. But still, the whole slime incorporation where it crossed, it did that crisscross. I thought that was really cool. And they were so close too, right?
Because
they had gotten that part to fall over, which makes me wonder why it didn't, because it didn't even seem to shake. I don't know how they had it set up, but it just, unfortunately fell flat, or didn't fall flat.
Didn't, but yeah, right.
As it should have.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it was like too heavy for the packets or something. If they only put like one packet back there and it wasn't strong enough to knock it over, or who knows. But one thing that I thought was interesting to learn, because we get a little bit more of their backstory, is that Zach is actually the one who is way more into Legos. Whereas, you know, in the first episode, my impression was that Tim was like way into it because he was kind of guiding everything in the first episode. And Zach was like, yeah, okay, my dad's a big Lego nerd or whatever. But apparently it's the opposite.
And they're getting to bond together, father and son. Aww. Building exploding Legos.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the teams. For the top two, we get Lauren and Brian, I want to say sibling lovers, but that's so not right.
Yeah, do not say
siblings,
that.
The siblings, Lauren and Brian, who ultimately end up winning. And then, as we mentioned earlier, Dave and Richard end up in the top two. The arbitrary bottom two were Tim and Zach, because unfortunately their POW was not exposed, not in the way you'd want it, at least. And Jack and Dawn were also in the bottom for the things that we mentioned previously, and unfortunately ends up with them being eliminated. Do you think this was the right decision?
Yeah, I do. I think overall they didn't make as good a use of all the space as everybody else did. And then their explosion didn't go as planned. So I think this was the right choice. You know, as sad as it was to see them go, because they're fun. But
I completely agree. All right. Goodbye, Jack and Dawn. But it is a new dawn for our Lego master. In episode three, the Make and Shake Challenge. This was my favorite of the three. I believe yours as well.
Absolutely. I was excited about this one from the start. Super excited to talk about it.
I think not only what works for this challenge is, of course, the nerdy side of us. Like, you know, I grew up watching Building Big, and our dad is on the seismic committee. And there's just like this whole intrinsic earthquakeness to our family. But I thought it also just made for really great television, because there were clearly defined stakes. You could see when the building fell over. Whereas with some of the other Lego Masters judging, it's, oh yeah, it's story. It's these building techniques that we're not really familiar with. This was building fall down, bad.
Yeah, right. And the final judging came down to, was there kind of a story with it? But it definitely was not the overall focus like some of the other episodes are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Here in the Make and Shake Challenge, the competitors were tasked to build a 4-foot tall building that had to be both sturdy and aesthetically pleasing. Although we learned that the sturdy part really counted more. So make it sturdy. And then if you can, make it aesthetically pleasing. Of course, we also get some fabulous 911 Fox cross promotion with Jennifer Love Hewitt that had absolutely no place in the episode, but it was there.
Hey, cross promotion. That's how it goes.
That's right. And essentially, they had to put their buildings on a shake plate, and then it was subjected to the Brichter scale, which went apparently all the way up to 11.
Okay, so as a nerd in both geology and just and movies in general. Okay. Yeah, exactly. I love the fact that one, it's the Brichter scale after the Richter scale, which is a commonly used scale for measuring earthquakes. And then it goes to 11 because what amp doesn't go to 11? You would want your amp to go to 11. So if your amp is at 11, you're going to be shaking things. Makes sense. Brichter scale.
Richter scale. And we had, of course, learning about the interlocking brick technique, which for all you Lego aficionados out there, it makes your tower stronger.
It does. And actually, yeah, it comes into play in one of our contestants' towers here that made it super strong. So I do want to say, as we go along, I did get a little bit of insight from our resident seismic design specialist, our dad, who is part of the AREMA Committee 9, which is seismic design for railway structures. So after the episode, I texted him and I was like, what's your insight on this one? So I've got a few little choice bits of information for you. We've got some structural tidbits here in seismic design.
This is why you come to the RAGP Lego Masters podcast. We got the inside hookup. Am I right?
Ow.
Right, let's go.
We got the knowledge.
Yeah, shake it. Girl. I don't know. It's done. We move.
Move on.
Mark and Steven. Okay. All right. So same way, we're going to go through each of the competitors. We're going to talk about the structures that they built, what we thought of each one. So starting off this episode is Mark and Steven. So these are the decade of building with Tyler, and they apparently have experience with these types of buildings, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, apparently they have built tall buildings before, and they do make a really nice looking, I think theirs was an ancient lighthouse, which the actual lighthouse on the top seemed kind of tiny, but the rest of the building was pretty and they had some good elements to it. But during their build, you know, one of their interviews, they get real cocky and they're like, we're going to break the whole setup. Mm-hmm. Which, spoiler alert, they did not. They had a good weak place. Yeah, exactly. In fact, they did not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Sasha, well, the thing about the lighthouse, too, that it was actually Tyler or was it Amy maybe who said, not Tyler, Amy and Jamie, who said something during the walkthrough that was like, oh, be careful putting something too large on top. So I wonder if they took that into consideration and just put sort of a torch on top instead of what the more traditional sort of large lighthouse top. But regardless, they still have some issues because even at level 5 on the, or 4, I believe, on the Brichter scale, they start losing pieces. And then, of course, the whole thing finally topples at level 8.
Yeah. And they, you know, there was an obvious weak spot there where they went from kind of the bigger building to the smaller building. They didn't have a lot of support running through from the bottom to the top. So it kind of makes sense that that's where it broke off. And honestly, when I was my first impressions on my first watch through, you know, they had the Brichter scale, but it didn't click that it was the level of the Brichter scale that was going to come into play. I was like, well, how do they judge it? Is it the height that's left? But it's like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, level 8. And I was like, oh, yeah, because, you know, they can't just make it to one level and then you have to judge the height left versus the level. Yeah, they got way too complicated.
Yeah, it becomes there's multiple variables. Then you have to come up with some sort of an equation. Is it height times scale? Is it scale divided by height? You know, how do you work that in together? So we're going purely based on the level of the Brichter scale. And also, it was interesting to see how they define. I mean, I guess it was pretty obvious what they defined as falling over. Essentially, if a big chunk of it fell off, right, then that counted, because theirs started to come apart at level 5 or 6, that top piece you were talking about, but it didn't fall over until level 8.
Right. And it did seem, you know, as we go through these, that if you still had height up to 4 feet, you were still valid, regardless of what has come off of your building.
Oh, that's good. That as long as you're still above 4 feet, you're okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Well, Mark and Steven set the bar at 8, but then that bar is immediately broken with Natalie and Michelle coming in with their I think it was a wedding cake, right? The 3-tiered wedding cake.
Yeah, pink, white, and gold cake, which is really pretty built, you know, but and solidly built. And it, I mean, this is where, you know, the story, I don't think they had necessarily a story to go with it, or at least they didn't edit in the story, but it was just like, here's a cake. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, I think that was about it. It was a wedding cake. I mean, kind of in the same way that the lighthouse was an Atlantean lighthouse. It's not like there was really a story with that one either.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, so they have they go all the way to level 9 before those top layers break off. But you can see along the way that the layers start to separate from one another, which is kind of interesting to see. But I think their goal was just like make this big solid structure.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of fun watching them when they start to separate and then they're just kind of bouncing around and you're just waiting for it to fall off. I think there's a lot of suspense to this episode that made it really exciting.
Yes, and that's why I think as a viewer, this episode in particular was really exciting because there was something that was a clearly definable stakes. So at each building that we got to watch was like, oh my God, when's it gonna fall? And it got really exciting. I would love if they did this one again. I mean, this one and then the bridge one from last season, I think
That was cool.
Top two. As an engineer, they're interesting to me, but then also just from a TV perspective, because there's something that's so clearly definable as a win and lose. Anyway, love it. Okay, enough about that. Maria and Philip, theirs, the most gorgeous, I think, of all of the towers.
Beautiful.
It was the blue within the vines going around it. Obviously not structural, but lovely. Well,
but they kind of were, because those were a lot of the ball joints that were helping to hold it together too. So they were hoping that was reinforcement. But each level had nice windows and colors. And I thought they did a really neat job with their building.
It looked like a real building. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, as much as a Lego building can look like a real building, right? It was really pretty. Well, okay, but for the time allotted and the goal at stake, you know what I mean? It had a door on it.
Awesome.
It had a door. I don't think anybody, someone else built a cake, okay? They actually built a building, right?
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so they actually managed to get all the way to level 10, which puts them in the lead. As we know, we're only going based on the level. So still, Mark and Steven end up in the bottom as Maria and Philip go all the way up to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the one I'm really interested in. So Paris and Modo are the engineers. Okay. So obviously, they're like, oh, we're engineers. We got it. We know. But unfortunately, I think they spent so much time trying to initially decide what they were going to do, because there was the whole discussion about, oh, what's the strongest shape? Well, triangle. Oh, or do we use the hexagon? Do we make this sort of V structure? Ultimately, as we saw, I mean, they built something that stood up. It was just really ugly.
Yeah, I one of my first notes was, are they overthinking this because they're engineers and they are putting way too much thought into it instead of just build something? Yep. So obviously it does. It comes down to the very end. They've got this core structure that looks really good. And then they just start slapping stuff on the outside. It was so our resident expert's comment on this was, it figures that the engineers had a good core frame but poor exterior decor performance.
That is 100% accurate.
Level 3, plates are popping off already. But the whole core structure made it to 11. So, you know.
Yeah, it stood all the way, and the actual core structure didn't end up, which I noticed for a lot of these, or a lot of the ones that seemed to be pretty sturdy, the point of failure was actually at the contact point between the building and whatever plate it was sitting on, which makes me wonder about that's why buildings, you dig into the ground and put beams in the ground, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're not just built flat on the stone. So anyway, so their structure probably could have stood so much more because it was light. it was well designed. It was that essential. Just I watch the building big. All right. You just got to build that core. You're good to go.
It's especially light when all your sides pop off early.
Well, that too. Or your sides are just the ground. You know, the ground Lego panels, the flats.
Yeah. Yeah. That right. Yeah.
It felt like they just stuck them to the side.
Oh, yeah. They were like, you know, slap a coat of paint on it and call it good.
Right. It's fine. Yeah.
Hey, it got them pretty well. So
right, I mean, got them all the way to the top three. So good for them, and hopefully that felt somewhat validating to be the engineers and actually making it to the top.
Yeah, right.
Next up is Brian and Lauren, siblings, and siblings. They talk about interlocking. They got that on lock.
Yeah, they actually, and they had, you know, they'd had a little story there, like Georgina the Giant's birthday cake. So, oh, okay, we have a Giant's birthday cake. So there's a little more story behind that, which is good. And their cake looked really cool, too. They had a lot of little minifigs in the frosting between the layers. That was kind of fun. And our resident expert said there was no obvious weak spots.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because they just it was like almost the moment the challenge was announced, they said, we're just going to make it completely solid.
Yep. And they did. And it obviously worked really well for them.
Yeah. I mean, it stayed put together. And then the failure point, I think, also was at the bottom. But it only made it all the way to level 10. I mean, still like a great job, but not enough to necessarily put them in the top.
Right. Absolutely.
Sarita and Randall, they had the record label building, which that if you're going to do a story, this one, I think, made the most sense because, you know, oh, we're going to make your record drop, Shake by the Music, that kind of stuff, which I thought exactly, which I thought really fit. And I thought this was really cool. There's also a very just solid structure and made it all the way to level 10.
And this was so Randall has a degree in architecture and had to take some structural classes. So I was really curious to see after, you know, you never know if that's foreshadowing in a good way or a bad way when they put something like that on there. So it was really cool to see it make it up to level 10. And yeah, their story was really neat too.
And their building also had a door. So points for door from me. That doesn't
matter. Leona's criteria is you must have a door. Your cake better have a door.
I better see a door on that cake.
All right. I'll make you a birthday cake with a door.
It's my one criteria. Zach and Wayne. Zach and Wayne here, we got to talk about the decision to use the golden brick. So they won the golden brick back in episode one and feel not so confident about their build.
No, and you never know whether it's editing or actually what's going on, but they seem to be struggling about how they're going to put it together and what they're going to be doing. They've got this butterfly bracket design. And one thing I do want to point out that I didn't point out before, but when I thought of this challenge, even in the previews for this season, Technic blocks were like, yeah, you strengthen everything with Technic, have some cross bracing, all that. And they did use that in this. So I was hopeful, but you're right. They did not feel confident in the whole thing. And I think this also comes into the whole, Saja, whole imposter syndrome thing, because they, you know, episode two, they're like, we're taking the golden brick all the way. We're not going to use it until last minute. And then episode three, I think one of them talked the other into using it.
I think that definitely was the case, just based on the body language also, which ultimately they didn't really need to use here because they were able to make it to level 10. That was the thing that I noticed, is that the teams that did really well are the ones that use the, what did you call them? The Technic bricks?
Yeah, Technic bricks. So yeah, it was a line that Lego came out with early on. Well, not that early on, but that is more geared towards mechanics. And that's the ones that originally had like gears in them. And so you'd build a little engine that went into this just frame of a car and you could see the engine working. Or I had a helicopter that you could see that had a little gear stick in it that would drive where the angle of the helicopter blades went. And it's eventually what led into the mindstorms that we talked about with the, you know, motorized stuff. And so those sorts of building elements, I'm even noticing in newer sets, they're incorporating it in more normal sets these days as a strengthening unit.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. So there you go. Lego Master future competitors, use Technic bricks to make it strong.
There's your Lego expert.
It's your Lego tip of the day.
The more you know.
The more you know. Well, here's a team up next that really doesn't need any hints from us because they made it all the way to level 11, and that is Dave and Richard. And they have the whole tube beam exoskeleton design.
Yes, and we do have some expert insight on this because I was fascinated by this one. And hollow tubes are actually used as a structural design for earthquakes and just for high rises. So the Sears Tower, which is now the Willis Tower in Chicago, is made up of a series of 9 bundled tubes. There you go.
Yes.
There is your building knowledge for the day.
Because it increases the space on each floor because you don't have this big chute in the middle. You actually take the support beams from the middle and you slide them to the outside and you make a big old tube. Boom.
Boom.
See? Take that,
tube Dad. Technology. We're getting the tube technology. Yes. Scientists are working on it.
Science. Well, they also, speaking of science, I guess, math, I guess.
Hey, they math got is the purest science, according to... my husband, who has a math degree.
Yeah, all right, I knew it.
Yeah.
They put in the Fibonacci sequence, and they have the visual representation, which can you imagine? They're like, all right, so we need 4 feet tall. What? Let's do the math to break up how many, you know, bricks we need at each level. And I thought that was cool.
That was cool, because David is an elementary school teacher, so I think he's always thinking of creative ways to teach, you know, math to kids. And I think this was a really cool way, with the colors being different on each level and separating that out. And I have a soft spot for the Fibonacci sequence, because there was a show on PBS when I was growing up called Square One TV, and it was on for like a season or two, and it was all about math. And there was it was like a little sketch math comedy show almost that taught you about math as a kid. And they had a spoof of Dragnet on there called MathNet. And so they solved crimes with math. And my introduction as like an 8-year-old to the Fibonacci sequence was they had to solve this crime that they used the Fibonacci sequence to solve. And so, yeah.
Nerd. If any TV show perfectly describes you, it's the mixture of math and sketch comedy.
Right? I know. And spoofs of, you know, crime shows, because that's my other thing. So,
Yeah.
I wish I had that somewhere recorded.
I mean, they're bringing everything back. They're bringing Wishbone back, so maybe they'll bring that back.
I know. What's the story with that?
I don't know. I haven't read the articles, but also I get it. Caleb and Jacob, the twins. All right. So they have the, as described by Jamie, the freshest approach I've seen so far to their building design.
So, yeah, they have a really unique system that they try to incorporate in their building, which I actually really like the design of their building. They built it as a building that's being constructed, which was really neat looking to begin with. But they decided to try and put shock absorbers by using these tires on posts at the bottom to try and resist some of that shaking, which I thought was kind of a neat idea. It ended up not suiting them so well because other parts of their building were not as reinforced. But you could see the way that building shook versus some of the other ones was affected by it.
It definitely worked. I mean, the problem is that the one issue was that connection between the bottom and the top part, and they just weren't able to get that together. But this 100% reminded me of, I was almost half expecting the engineers, Paris and Moto, to go with something like this. We need to put a tune mass damper in the top because that will offset.
Who's calling
this.
Who a nerd now?
We don't have time for that. Move on.
You and your tube mass dampers.
Anyway, so if anyone's interested, it's this like big thing that sits at the top of buildings, and essentially it uses the counter momentum to try to stop the building from swaying in case of an earthquake. All right, so here they sort of do that, something that's similar, using the Lego tires. I love the little crane on the side. I thought that was neat. Like you said, it's the building that's still in construction. Unfortunately, it broke at level 8, which does put them in the bottom here.
Yeah. I thought that was too bad because I think their creativity with the building itself, they used cross bracing with the Technic bricks on the bottom, and then they had the creativity of the damper too. So it is a shame they ended up on the bottom with all that.
Mm-hmm. We have two more teams to talk about. The first is Zach and Tim. Unfortunately, here they also struggle a bit with their structure falling also at level 8.
Yeah, they did have some Technic on the side, but they had a weakness point where they narrowed in as well, like we've seen in some of the other buildings. They also, because they didn't quite have the aesthetics and decided last minute to just add a bunch of cats to it, which I thought was hilarious, actually.
That's actually how I solve my problems as well. Just add a bunch of cats. Throw some cats on it.
I'm picturing your cells now with cats on them.
Put some cats
just
in them.
Tiny cats
fun.
On cells. I'm going to make that for you.
The cats were cute. An odd choice, but
they
very
were.
Cute.
I thought they were kind of fun.
They tried to make it a story here.
They did. Mm-hmm. But they were constantly, well, from the editing, they were constantly told that, hey, you might want to put some, you know, interesting things on here. It's still about the design, not just the, you know,
I think they
shooting.
Had a door. Though.
Oh, so, well, Liana thinks it's a winner. Cats and doors.
Cats are the two things I care about in life. Yeah, I mean, it was tough. Like, even I think at level 1 or 2, the roof was already starting to come off, so I didn't necessarily have high hopes for them, but I enjoy them as a team, so I was rooting for them.
Yeah, no, they're fun to watch as a team, I give you that. But unfortunately, lands them in the bottom with Mark and Steven and... Yeah.
Caleb and Jacob.
Yeah. And Jacob, yeah.
The last team is Susan and Jen, who, again, talk about a redemption arc. They end up making their building go all the way to level 11, which I thought was interesting because I guess Jen seems to be serious. I mean, is serious when it comes to Legos because she built this 6-foot-tall Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that thing was cool looking. And she talked about how she built it and the emphasis she had to put to keep it together. So she used it, what she called the threaded rod, which is a lot of techniques together. And then just the compression of the weight holding it down. And that's the approach they took with this, and it pulled off well. And their story was scary building, which was like there was kind of a face in the middle of the building.
Kind of had some terrifying eyes on it, but it also, I don't know. They don't really look like eyes.
Yeah.
But it's a concept. It's like, a concept.
Okay, the shaking is the building coming to life. I get that.
Right. I think the main thing that they were able to do so well that a lot of the other teams failed at was, you know, you have sort of these two levels. A lot of the teams had multiple levels. And because of the way that they were able to do the Technic bricks, that kept that top piece intact all the way to 11. Very impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And still, that Wonder Woman, that was pretty awesome, too.
Yeah. Well, and they were the ones that only had 1 foot done with 25% of their time left. So they went from not being able to even turn something in to being in the top. Shocking.
Yeah,
amazing.
That was really amazing. Yeah, no, I agree. No. That actually brings me to a point. So when they're talking to, or when Jamie is over there talking to Susan and Jen and says, you know, I'm really skeptical about this because good builders can put down 500 bricks an hour. I was thinking about that. And there's got to be some caveats on that because if I'm building a new set, I am nowhere near that fast. But if I'm building something that I've got my bricks, you know, at hand, all sorted like I have them now, then yeah, I can reach that. So I think, you know, I was curious where they got that number from.
Yeah, I wonder. Maybe it's I don't know, do they keep stats at Lego headquarters?
They might. I mean, they hire a lot of people that make big designs and big sculptures to put in like malls and various things. So it may be something that, you know, now that they have enough people working on that, they keep track of that and try to figure out, you know, okay, you got to kind of keep to this quota, I guess. Hopefully it's not like an Amazon type thing, but.
Oh, God. Yeah, I got to keep your brick BPH up.
BPH.
Drop your BPHs in the chat. Okay. Now, like we talked about, our top three are Moto and Paris, Susan and Jen, and David and Richard, with David and Richard ultimately winning with the strongest Woo-hoo! Aesthetic. Yeah. So congratulations to them. I still am really rooting for them as a team. So really Absolutely. Happy about that.
Yeah.
In the bottom, we have Mark and Steve, Caleb and Jacob, and Zach and Tim. And unfortunately, it is the end of the road for Zach and Tim. But we got to see Zach shove Tim or other way around.
Into the snow.
Yeah. Into the snow.
Tim shoved Zach into the snow.
Love that.
I think Tim did that. Yeah.
Okay.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we'd lose them here. I get the decision. Honestly, I also could have seen them putting Mark and Steve. To me, it was, or no.
It's the cockiness of Mark and Steve with their lighthouse. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. Like maybe it was the cockiness of it all that made me think, send them home.
This is the first episode. I mean, I like Jack and Dawn, but this is the first episode where even I was like tearing up a little bit. I was like, look at Tim's getting all teary. Oh.
Yeah. Well, and then they had the whole thing about, this is a shared experience we'll get to have, blah, blah, blah. I was like,
I know so that. I think for me, I was thinking about this with reality shows because I know you love the drama side, but I like the can we all just be a community and get along? And I think that's why I really love this show is because it feels a lot more like that than something like Big Brother where you're like, we got to vote somebody out and do this.
Everybody gets along. That's
can't we all just get along?
I mean, I only watch my 600-pound life stories where they're a success. If they're not a success, I'm not interested. I want to see something uplifting. Okay. So that criteria. I
think this is definitely uplifting. I'll give you that.
All right. Well, Tim's dab may have been fashionable, but it certainly wasn't as fashionable. I can't do it.
Yeah. Puya's a lot better than you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Episode 4. Hats incredible.
Hats incredible.
This was, I mean, we didn't really have anything like this in season one, right?
No,
I don't remember.
No, we didn't. I couldn't think of anything either because I thought this was super fun and a good addition to the, things you can do with Lego.
Very cool concept. And we saw, was it Moto, I think, who had made his own wearable cat face before?
Yes, I thought that was awesome. That cat.
So it's a thing. I feel like every kid who's played with Legos has made a Lego bracelet at some point in time, right?
I can't imagine not doing that. No, when I first started getting back into Legos when I was like 18, 19, is I actually made a replica of my ex's head that he could wear on his head. And I remember thinking it's really difficult to make it strong, but it's also really heavy when you do that. And then the only other wearable thing I've made, I'm not going to post a picture of because it's not safe for work necessarily, but I've made a Lego bra before.
Hey. All right. Well, there you go. So, you have some experience in the wearable work of Lego fashion, which is what the teams are tasked for to do here, where they have to make a Lego hat. But not only do they have to make a Lego hat, I loved this addition to the challenge. They have to model it themselves. And most importantly, strike a pose for 5 seconds, hands free, showing that you can wear the hat without having to support it with your hands, which ends up getting a couple of our teams in trouble here.
Yeah, that is like an exercise in knowing your balance and knowing the balance of how the Legos are going to sit. And that, like you said, does end up biting a couple teams in the ass. But I just have to say before we even go into that. So we start the episode and all the hosts come out with various fashions. And it was like, damn, Jamie. Where did you come from in this episode?
And Amy also, she's so tall, and then put her in heels. She's very slender. She could be a model.
Dude, my note on her is like, she's been fashionable this whole time. But I wrote like Bond girl fashion, Amy, in my notes. Like she looked like she could have been a Bond girl when she came out.
Yeah, exactly. And the makeup fit, all very gorge. Loved that. Love to see it. Okay, so the way that they're going to go about this is they have to be inspired by a color, which was chosen at random, I think. They just ran up and grabbed the black bag, right? With the suit in it?
Yep.
Okay. All right. And they have a very monochromatic outfit. But, of course, the hat doesn't just have to utilize that color. They can use other brick types as well, but they have to be inspired and sort of fit with that color.
Right. And I do think it was interesting that, when they do their catwalk, both members are dressed in the same color, even though only one is going on the catwalk. I actually thought that was kind of funny. Like, what was the point of that?
you know,
I mean, it made
support.
It matching and fun. Yeah, it's a team event. I get it. Ooh, and one thing that I was also going to say, I don't know if you read the magazine Studs that I did pause because I saw a trigger word that got me to pause it, which was the headline at the very bottom said, Ken Jeong, yes, he's busy, but he's available.
And oh my god, that's so funny.
Oh, I have to bring that up because that's so funny.
Cross promotion in the best way possible. Ken Jeong slander.
A little hidden cross promotion, if you will.
hidden gem, hidden Lego gem.
Definitely hidden gem. Anyway, so yes, they had the colors, and they had to match their hat to the colors, but yeah, with flair.
With flair. And a lot of them made jewelry also, which I wasn't expecting. So the first team, I was like, oh, you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I do. So when I rewatched it today, I was like, I think everybody has some sort of accessory. So I'm wondering if maybe originally that was part of it, or did like one team make something, because like our twin brothers had a really awesome like bandolier basically with all of these cake, you know, and baking tools in it. So did like one team have something like that? And all the other teams are like, ooh, we need to have something like that too.
It could absolutely, I mean, that's the thing is like, they're all locked in one room. They can see what other people are doing. So it's sort of one of those effects like, oh, well, she's got that. Oh, well, I need that too. And so then they all just like start making stuff. Or like you said, it could have been part of the original prompt that somehow just didn't make it in the edit for some reason. But there were necklaces. There was the sash. There was a ring at one point in time. Some bracelets.
There was a Flava Flav compass.
That's how I wrote it. Yeah, boy,
I'm navigating, boy.
Oh my god, I love Flavor of Love. All right,
I know.
And so that just really added to the whole aesthetic. And then you had obviously people really getting into it on the runway, which Lauren, the first person to walk the runway of Brian and Lauren, I think just set the tone for what the fashion show was going to be. They had color red and made this fire phoenix rising from the hat aesthetic.
Yeah, that one was really cool because my first thought, you know, when Brian said red fire, my thought was catching fire because of the Hunger Games. And then they did this really cool phoenix. And then she had this necklace that to me looked like the Eye of Sauron. But I'm sure it was flames, but I was like, oh, Eye of Sauron. Why is she wearing the Eye of Sauron with her phoenix hat?
Not my first thought, but I thought that the way that they did the necklace almost kind of matched the lay over the hat. And so it felt like a continuation of that and therefore really just all worked together to complete the look.
Yeah, no, I thought, and then Amy did make the comment that the ribbons draping around the hat really kind of tied it together. It tied the back and the front together and it made it look fashionable.
Mm-hmm. It did. I will say some of the hats more fashion than others. This one, fashion, I thought. I think they do consistently good builds. That's what I'm saying. Brian and Lauren, I see you.
No, they are the stably good builds. I get that.
Oh, it does look like the Eye of Sauron. I'm looking at it now. It does.
Doesn't it? I know. Yeah. But yeah, fashion, Eye of Sauron. We got
fashion.
It.
And she's able to hold it also for 5 seconds. So therefore it meets the criteria of the competition.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Susan and Jen are up next. So these are the moms, the Lego moms. And the color that they get tasked with is gray.
So gray, I think most people would kind of wonder what to do with that. For me, it's a color of a lot of rocks. So I probably would have gone like a waterfall over rocks or something. That was my first thought. But they did Susan's, was it great grandmother had a feathered hat photo? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of mimicking what the feathers looked like. They went for light, which was good. That helps with the balance and everything. I get that. But they did get critiqued for not making the back look as good as the front.
Right. I think it was Jen who models it down the runway and she does a really great job. But as soon as she makes that turn, she's giving you face, beauty face. She's got face, but then turns around and it's just all gray. and it's a little disappointing. And of course, they have to include the edit of Jamie looking disappointed that it was all just gray. It's like, but it does stay on her head. She's able to do the 5-second hand removal, and it stays up there, and it's got the movement as it walks down the runway, which I thought was really neat. Although I will say it maybe was a little bit simple compared to some of the other designs that we saw, but the whole helmet thing, man, that thing stayed on her head.
That was intense. Yeah, no, that was well built. And I did like the movement of the feathers moving while she was walking, and the fact that it wasn't, you know, throwing her balance off while doing that. But yeah, I do think that compared to some of the ones, especially that we start seeing, even with the Phoenix, it was a little more simple of a design.
And it was a helmet. Now, to be fair, I probably would have done something similar to ensure that it stayed on your head, which we'll talk about with one of the other teams. They're able to do that, but still integrate it into the design. I think part of the issue was, is it just looked like a helmet with a bunch of feather things on top of it.
Right.
So cool concept, but I think maybe it needed more. I guess it was gray, though. I was going to say put more pink on the helmet part of it, but then it is that too pink? You know, I don't know. Whatever. It stayed on her head, so.
It did. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was definitely a tough thing to hit.
Well, speaking of a hat that, honest to God, as soon as I saw it.
What the heck?
Before they even got to the runway, when they were just building it and they just had the big round tube
brim.
Plate,
I know. Oh,
it was.
God.
It's so ugly. It's so ugly.
And it's huge, absolutely huge. My notes even say huge.
So this is the twins, Caleb and Jacob, and they make, you know, they're going for the whole giant chef's hat, which again, love as a concept. The only problem is that does it look, it just looks like a giant white cylinder thing,
ridiculous.
But not a chef's hat. It's because I guess the chef's hat, it's just.
I expect more like floppiness on the top, maybe some pleats, something to make it a chef's hat. I did like the Simpsons donut.
The donut was the best part, easily. The donut was so good. I wanted to eat that donut.
The donut, and if you looked at the tool belt, which it was only on the rewatch that I was like, wait, like they've got like pastry, like icing tips and all sorts of stuff on the tool belt that was really cool, which is not the challenge. It was the hat. But yeah, that hat was gigantic. And I don't know how his head kept that up.
Never skip neck day, I guess. This
no
was
kidding.
Just amazing. This is more of a balance challenge than anything. The fact that he's able to keep that whole thing up there.
Seriously.
Oh my gosh. Shout out.
No, that's good neck strength.
Yeah. I mean, look, they said plaid is fashion and they love plaid. So I don't know what I expected when it came to fashion from.
They were definitely self-proclaimed not fashion.
At least they know their lane. Right. They know their lane.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can still be creative in that fashion.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next up is, oh my God, this. Okay. My heart is breaking again just talking about it. All right. So Parasimoto, the engineer, is amazing. They want to show they're not just boring engineers, which I will say they definitely did a great job with their build here. But as we are referring to, unfortunately, they had a break like literally 40 seconds before they had to be on the runway.
I feel like this is the exact opposite of what happened in the previous episode where they went all structure and no design. And here they went all design and no structure because their elements of design with that flexible brim and the snake were so cool. Mm-hmm. And then it just didn't come together. And it was just, And those glasses, I love the glasses.
The glasses were great. Both the way that they designed sort of the Lego fabric, I don't know what to call it. What did they call it? It was like the Explorer hat or whatever, because they had tan. Mm-hmm. So tan was their color.
Right. Yeah.
That part was really cool. The snake with the tower, really cool. But yeah, they just didn't have that integration. And so they had the break, you know, 40 seconds. And I love the way that the editing kept it in there because you can hear the voice that, you know, the voiceover saying, all right, 40 seconds to runway. And
and then everybody else backstage just like, you know, oh, man. Yeah, that was rough to watch. But I think Paras did as best as he could in that. He kept a straight face, as devastating as that was. And it was still a really cool design, though.
Mm-hmm. Very cool design. And unfortunately, it just didn't last. It lasted about 1 second on the runway. But their design, you know, we can talk about some of the others, but I would say their design looked cooler than some of the other ones. But this is where that criteria of, well, but you got to stand up, you know, put them in the bottom.
Yep.
Sarita and Randall are up next. So they are going to be inspired by, obviously, grandmas in their Sunday best going to church. Also Egypt, question mark?
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting meld thing going on. Like, because I could see, you know, there is a set that is being considered to become an actual Lego set that is a Tutankhamun mask. So I could see where that might have come in. But then I also see the grandma fashion, because even like when we were growing up, mom would have us decorate Easter hats, like at least a few years. I don't know if you remember that, but.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, Easter. Yeah. Like hats, like big old hats for Easter or just for church in general. Yeah, of course, the aesthetic. And I think that's what the colors meant to represent. But then the design was the Egyptian part of it,
I guess. And no, I think it was confusing. It was well built. It stayed on. It stayed up the 5 seconds unattended. The glasses were fun, especially with the little glasses chain, because I totally thought of like old grandma glasses with the glasses chain. But yeah, I think and I think Jamie points it out that like we can, you know, how are you going to bring those together? That I don't know what happened.
Sure about that. Yeah, too. And the thing is like it's not that you couldn't make that combination of aesthetics work. It's just for the time limit that you have, and then all of the other criteria that you have to meet with. It has to balance on your head. You have to be able to hold it for 5 seconds. I think they maybe just got in over their head with what they were trying to do, because I would say in terms of one of the uglier hats, but again, survived the challenge. And I got to hear Jamie say grandmother Pharaoh realness, which is a phrase
that was awesome. And that has never been said in the history.
Oh
of
my
anything.
Gosh. grandmother Pharaoh house down boots. Let's go. Gorgeous. Gorge. All right. Mark and Steven. This.
Oh my
gosh. Oh my gosh. This had a reveal, a reveal to it.
This, I know. And getting the color brown, like that is not, you know, when you think of fashion, brown is not necessarily a color I think of, but holy cow, they did an awesome job with this hat.
Right. No brown cow stunning, but we did get a Buccaneer hat that as he first walked out, was it Mark or Steven? Who was the one that did the walk? Runway walk. Walk.
It was the beard one.
Yeah, the bearded one. As he was walking down the runway, you can't really see anything, right? You only see the front, the very thin, narrow front piece of the hat. But then as he turns, kakadaka, side to side, you get the moon and you get the sunset on the other. Really, really gorgeous designs.
Yeah, no, they were absolutely beautiful mosaics. And then the dolphin and the little turtles were awesome. They had the two colored flags as well. And then they had the Flava Flav. I thought it was a clock, and then I rewatched it. I was like, oh, it's probably a compass. A clock doesn't really make sense for sailing.
This is a Buccaneer Flava Flav inspired look.
Yeah, you know, hey, if we've got Pharaoh grandmas, then we Buccaneer Flava Flaves. So
that's what I'm saying. It's 100% possible.
Absolutely.
I really like this one quite a bit. All right. Maria and Philip. So they were the only ones to include lights here. And that was literally the first thing I thought was, oh, what's something that can make it a little bit flashier without adding ideally a whole lot? Lights. So I'm so happy someone did.
Literally flashier. Yeah, this kind of brings me back to the first season when I forget who they were, but they put lights in the eyes of their pharaoh, I think, when they had like an Egyptian build. But yeah, it was like, oh, why isn't anybody put lights in anything? Because we had Jack and Don that put lights in the eyes of their butterfly on the floats. So yeah, no, that was really cool. And they had yellow was their color. And so they went with a celestial theme of the sun and clouds. And it was really a really pretty design.
It was really pretty. They, you know, even though yellow was the color that they had, they still used sort of that as the sun piece and then did the blue and the white, which I thought was neat and had creative parts usage.
Total.
Yeah, with the little flamey thing in the middle. Very cool.
Yeah. Very cool. And they had, you know, elements to both the back and the front. which goes back to, you know, make it look nice both directions. Yeah. Yeah. It was very cool.
Very cool. These next two, though, that we're going to talk about, they end up in the top two. And this was the moment. This is for the Drag Race fans out there. It's like when you're at a gay bar and you're watching your fave queen come down the runway in a look that is just slaying, and everybody in the club just goes like, "Woo!" and goes wild. That was me by myself in my room to Zach and Wayne and then Natalie and Michelle. But we'll start with Zach and Wayne because they originally something simple, but they did this whole archery design, which was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and they did the look, Ma, no hands, and went down the entire 40 feet and back with no hands, with no need to even have a 5-second pause, but they still had to do that. And the pause with the actual, you know, pose with the archer pose, that was really cool. And I think one thing that they did really well is they still got a lot of height, but making it really light by the bricks that they chose, and kind of they were like almost leaf-like elements that were coming up out of the hat. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. So they had like the target on the side and then the arrows on the side. So that kept a lot of the weight sort of like low down. And then, like you mentioned, there's the feathers kind of coming up, but then it's kind of similar to the Buccaneer hat in that you don't necessarily see so much as you're walking down the runway, but then when you turn and then of course you had the pose along with it, that was high fashion.
Dude, totally high fashion. And he had the face and everything and just strut. Yeah, it was great.
And it didn't look like a helmet. Okay, this is where it was for sure a helmet. Look closely. It looks like a helmet, but it didn't look like a helmet. If you know what I'm saying.
No, it was like not an obvious, like, we're trying to keep this on your head. This is we designed this kind of thing.
Yeah, we did this on purpose. You can't really see, but that's the whole point because we designed it that way.
Yeah, no, it was really cool.
Natalie and Michelle are what was their color? Zach and Wayne, was it green? Yeah, it was green. It was green.
Yeah. Zach and Wayne were green. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, Natalie and Michelle, who are up next, they get the color black, and they do, I think, probably the most fashion of all of the looks here.
Absolutely. No, this was like hands down actual fashion here with their name of their hat when they show like the little, you know, crayon sketch design was Abra Couture Top Hat. And it was, you know, a little bit of, I think their original, what did they say? They were thinking Audrey Hepburn. And so they were going with that. And the fact that they did something that was so asymmetrical and had movement in it even, and still stayed up for that 5 seconds and they could walk with it, was just really, yeah, super well designed, well met on the challenge. They definitely deserved to be in the top two.
And the fact that theirs was asymmetric, yet they figured out the right balance of the pieces in order to make the thing stand up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just, and some math in there too. Mwah. Mwah. Gorge. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if Natalie and Michelle's hat was Mugler, David and Richard's was like Carnival meets Bob Mackey, because they have the whole like, Dave is Jamaican, so we're inspired by Carnival. And so we're going to make this very large headpiece. Unfortunately, it was very huge and very heavy.
And very one-dimensional, really, when you look at it. And I think that alone did them in. I think they could have something that was huge and ridiculous, but if they had it, you know, at least in three dimensions, then you've got some things balancing against each other. Mm-hmm. When you have everything in this giant fan in one direction, if you go forward or back, that's it. Like, side to side is balanced, but not the forward and back. And they kind of knew it going into it, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing is that it's really gorgeous. I love it. I love looking at it. But like you said, it's so unbalanced that if you're going to do something like that, I mean, oh my gosh, I don't even know how. Think about the helmets, Marisa, you'd have to hold that thing in place to keep it from going falling over.
So many
old helmets. Because it's huge.
It was. I know. It was gigantic. And they even said that. These are turning out way bigger than we expected. So.
All right. Well.
Oh, man. But it was beautiful. I mean, it was really gorgeous design, but yeah, that one dimensionality to it really hurt them.
Right. Well, at least it didn't actually fall on the judges. I did fall for it with the preview. I thought for a second that Will Arnett was about to be covered in Lego feathers.
Yeah, no kidding. I did too. And it got there and then not so much on the other side.
Not so much. Well, in this episode, everybody got judged, which I thought was kind of cool. It was nice that everybody at least got some feedback. But then, of course, we still have our top two and our top bottom here, with the top two being the ones we discussed, Natalie and Michelle and Zach and Wayne, with Natalie and Michelle ultimately taking the crown.
Agree with that. Yeah.
Agree.
Hands down. Absolutely. They did amazing and it was gorgeous. And yeah.
Love it. I would love to buy that and have that as an art piece.
Oh man, I would put that up in my Lego room, just like on display. That would be so
I know,
cool.
Right? Oh, very pretty. Yeah. And unfortunately, due to the fact that both of these team structures, hats, nope, not last episode, hats, nope. They're hats. Their hats fell apart on the runway. Dave and Richard and Moto and Paris end up in the bottom. And unfortunately, we lose the engineers here. But I think they had such a, I don't know, maybe it's the scientist and or engineer that fails all the time in me, that I loved their closing words of failure is how you learn. Failure is part of the process. Yes, queens.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I wish more people realize that it's hard to learn to fail. But when you learn to fail and accept it for what it is. Yeah, that's how you learn. Then you move on. So, yeah.
If everything works, you never learn.
Ugh. Yeah. And I do think it was the right choice, too. I mean, I think their last couple builds were not fully encompassing of what it needed to be. So, yeah, I agree with it, as sad as I was to see that. But I also, like I said before, I'm already sad to see everybody go, apparently. So,
right. I was shocked that I was so emotional when people were leaving. No, don't take them from me. They're mine.
Like, and they show like somebody else tearing up in the background. I'm like,
me. No. I will say I am excited to see more from Dave and Richard, so I'm also happy that they ultimately stayed, because I think they do have more to give in the competition, and I'm excited what they're able to do next week, and especially next week when the Golden Brick is back in play.
Yes, and next week will be kind of interesting. It looks like they have to design around like one brick that's being held up by wires or something. I think is that what you got from it?
Yeah, it was the whole theme is that it's got to be floating in the air. So you have to build something that will be suspended. However you want to interpret that, that's up to you. So I think we saw some of the teams do kind of like this floating rock design. But
it's going to be another exercise in balance, too, like this one was. So it'll be interesting to see how Dave and Richard kind of respond to that.
Mm-hmm. I think if I was doing this, I would absolutely want to do something circus or Moulin Rouge kind of themed. I would never be able to execute such an idea, but that's my first thought. That's what popped in my head when I saw the floating in the air kind of thing.
Are you thinking of Nicole Kidman, like on the trapeze when she gets lowered down? Yeah.
Yeah.
You could do, you know, we could combine her with the Diamond Thief and go from there.
Dude,
if you could do a Lego Tensegrity structure with that, that would be so cool. Where it's like floating on top of floating. That's so meta.
Yeah, that's super meta.
All right.
You could probably do it, though.
I bet you could.
Because I think you would just... all right. Well, thank God we're not competing. We'd spend like 10 years just trying to figure out the build before we actually touched anything.
Yeah, I will say, you know, as much of a Lego nerd as I am, my husband even looked at me while we were watching the third episode and goes, these people are way more into it than you are even. I was like, yeah, I don't go to conventions and actually compete in those conventions yet.
Yet. It puts things in perspective for you or for him, I guess.
It did. Like, it totally was like,
see, I'm not that bad.
And the way he said it, he was like, oh, you're kind of normal.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I thought that was really funny. I was like, yes, yes, this room full of Legos is totally normal.
Normal, yes, normal, yes. Here, watch the first season again.
Yes, thank you for that. Anyway, okay. Well, yeah, this has been fun. That's been a fun three episodes. I hope the next three go just as well, because this was an exciting grouping to talk about.
And on that note, we will be back after episodes 5, 6, and 7 to cover everything from those. We'll get the Golden Brick back in play, get some floating in the air, and then whatever, I guess, episodes 6 and 7 have in store for us. But thank you, Marisa, for going through everything. Thank you for doing the extra research and talking to Dad to get the little inside scoop.
I'm all about using my resources, yo.
There you go. Resourceful. And remember, everyone, failure is how you learn. Failure is always part of the process. All right. So where can people find you on social media? Anything else you want to talk about? I don't know.
Oh, man, I'm behind on
Crime Scene Kitchen.
There we go.
Yes, Crime Scene
Kitchen. Because there was cakes in a bunch of these episodes. Mm. Yeah, I'm behind on that. So I got to watch that. I have been watching, especially with Will Arnett being on the show, I've been watching a lot of Smartless, and I keep loving that show more and more and keep realizing that there's a lot of Will Arnett in me. I think he is my spirit celebrity. Comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I like, he doesn't just pun on the show. He puns in that podcast a lot and it's just awkwardly throwing in jokes. And I'm like, oh man, I've gotten so many boos from like friends and coworkers that just like fit that archetype. So that's been awesome. Yeah.
And he's a perfect fit for Fox with the punnery of their shows, reality shows, I suppose.
Indeed. But yeah, on social media, I am at Shenura, which is T-S-H-E-N-U-R-A, or you can find me through Liana's Twitter handle. Otherwise, I'm on Reddit a little bit. That's about
it. No one's gonna go find you on Reddit. I mean, you can try, I guess.
I mean, I have cute cat pics on Reddit, so you know, if you want to find me there, it's the same handle.
There you go. Oh my god, did I tell you the other day? Because I use Reddit for so many different things, and I was like, yeah, I was on volume eating Reddit the other day, and he was like, what are you even talking about? What goes on the internet?
Volume eating. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's essentially a way to, if you want to feel full, but you don't want to eat like something super heavy. So yeah, it's a lot of
fruit. Yeah, that's like a lot of big salads and stuff.
Yeah, a big salad. So anyway, all right, that's been your volume eating update for the day.
Where can we find you, Liana? Because I think you're coming up here on some podcasts.
Oh my god, yes. So speaking of fashion, Beth Amon and I got together to record the All Stars season six preview for Drag Race. So that's out there, and I think by the time this drops, the episodes 1 and 2 will already be out on Paramount Plus, and we will be back with a weekly recap of that show. So very much looking forward to that. And you can find me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. If you are interested in supporting all of the content that we do, both on RHAP and on the Reality TV Wrap Ups feed, please consider becoming a patron of RHAP. So it is towards the end of the month, so just go ahead and wait till the start of next month, because you get charged the start of the month. So just like wait till the first. But you could join Rob Has a Podcast Patreon at patreon.com/RHAP or robhasawebsite.com/Patreon. Also, thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and we will talk to y'all in a couple weeks. All right. Bye.
Bye.